So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what's your name?
Erica Rucker.
Will you spell it for us?
E-R-I-C-A-R-E-C-K-E-R. And that's my name without my married name that I don't often use.
Oh, okay.
Unless something's alphabetized, then I use it.
No, I feel bad.
Like, otherwise, it's my name.
Yeah. So are you from Louisville?
Yes, born and raised.
Okay, Louisville. That's awesome. That's awesome. So every Louisvillian gets this question, right? So what high school did you go to?
Well, I actually went to two high schools. I went to Male for a year, and they gave me the option to stay and be like in a freshman homeroom, because I was fucking up. I wasn't a good student in high school. Or they said I could leave and go to my home school. And so I was tired of traditional school, and I was like, I'm going to my home school without telling my mom. And so my mom, when she found out, was not happy. But at that point, it was done. So
what was your home school, and what school, I guess, did you
So I came from Male. I was at Male High School,
right.
At Louisville Male High School, when it was downtown in the old building. And then I left and went to Seneca, which was in my neighborhood.
Okay, cool. So what do you do for your living? How do you make money?
Well, I don't make enough of it, but what I do make is from teaching. I'm an adjunct English professor at IUS and a freelance writer.
Yeah.
So sometimes a photographer, depending on if I want to do that much editing. That's a lot of work.
So this is an oral history about the Louisville music scene, mm-hmm. and your relationship to it, okay? And so I guess my question is when did you get introduced to the Louisville music scene, and where was your starting point?
Okay, so this is a sort of silly story. So I'm so embarrassing. So when I was a kid, let's see, I went to traditional middle school, mm-hmm. and there was a band that lived behind my school, and they had a van that said Brain Dead on it. So that was the name of the band. And I remember watching them, and they were like punk, so they had, you know, mohawks and leather jackets. And I would be in school and just thinking, God, those people are awesome, you know, like watching them. Like, I want to hang out with people like that. And then I had a friend in school who was a renegade, and I talked to my friend Emily Clements. And she was the kind of, in traditional school, you had to be very sort of buttoned up and, you know, hair very neat. But she would just shave her hair off and just have, like, bangs, and she would dye them different colors. And it was completely, like, they didn't have a rule against it because mm-hmm. they didn't expect it. So she was always sort of my idol. And then watching the Brain Dead behind my school was sort of the point at which I was like, these are my people. And then when I actually got old enough, I started going to shows at what used to be The Machine out in, I guess it's Laser Tag or whatever it is now, out in a Shelbyville Road area. Mm-hmm. And I also started going to Tool again. So those were, I'm trying to remember, like there were so many places. We would go to the Carl Casper's auto show, and they would have Battle of the Bands. So my sister, Aisha, and I were always together. And so we would just go to any show we found out about. And usually it was the metal show. And then we were at Jefferson Mall. I'm going to tell this story because it's relevant and silly. We were at Jefferson Mall. And we were like little metal kids at that time. And going to like these terrible hair band shows. And then this guy, Tim Ruth, who was in Evergreen or Cinderblock. I think it was The Revenants at that day. It was so many names of that band. But he was walking around Jefferson Mall, because he lived in the area too, and handing out flyers. And he walked past me and my sister, and we were like, oh, no, he didn't. So we went, you know, and said, excuse us, you know, like, can we have a flyer? And so he gave us the flyer, and he was like, this is a, you know, it's a punk show. And we were like, okay, we're cool with that. And so we went to the show, and I don't remember where it was at the time. I feel like it was at The Machine. But I remember us leaving, and we both were like, I feel sick. Like, we felt like throwing up. And they were like, can't wait to go back to that. So that was sort of our entry point into really getting heavily involved in going to shows every week. And
yeah. Okay, so I'm a metalhead too.
Right? Okay, good.
And I'm curious because I think that we might have something similar, mm-hmm. both being black female, right?
Yeah.
Into metal. How was your, what was the experience like going to your first show? Because you've already kind of talked about a little bit of I mean, we can call it what it is. It seems like at least a prejudice, right? With someone kind of skipping over.
Well, he was biracial, so it was you know, that was the other thing. So Tim was, he was a biracial kid. Okay. But, I guess he wasn't really thinking that we'd be interested because, there at the time, it was probably the early 90s. The scenes were still pretty segregated. Mm-hmm. Like, when we started going to shows, there was me and my sister, a girl named Heather, another couple of, like, Kirby Coleman, Kirby Ron, you'll hear his name, I'm sure. And then there was, like, one other black girl. There were very few of us. Mm-hmm. Like, there was none of, and so it was, he probably just assumed that we were like, most other brown kids he met and just skipped right on over. So,
yeah.
But we made sure that we were aggressive and were like, excuse us, what are you doing?
Yeah.
We want to know about this, so.
Right. So, what was it like going to your very first show with your sister? Like, when you walked in the door, did you see a lot of, like, what did you see?
As far as, like, some of our first shows were metal shows, and those were, we had a whole established, like, metal friend group.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what those shows were like, because punk really took over when we started going to those shows. But I do remember, like, the only prejudice we ever really sort of dealt with was at a metal show. And this guy was like, just rude, I don't know. And he was one of those people that, I clearly didn't have black friends, didn't know anybody black. But once he sort of met us, he kind of came around and was less like an asshole. But at first he was, just super rude. And it's been so long, 30 years, I don't remember all the details of that. So, I don't know. When we first went to a punk show, though, it was like, I don't know. Like, immediately there was no, people were very accepting. There were people in college, and I was kind of a bum at the time. Like, I was in between high school, like, ending high school and not really deciding on, like, what I was going to do as far as college was concerned. And so I really, the punk scene actually motivated me to go back to school.
That's cool.
And so, I think for me and my sister both, we just really found a sort of weird community because we were always a little, what would be a little different. Like, now all kids are all different and it's fine. But when we were deciding to, like, let our hair go natural or doing that, was not the same world. It was the world where if you didn't have processed hair or you didn't have a Jerry curl, I guess, you were a freak of nature. So we were freaks of nature at the time, which we were okay, we were fine with because we had each other and our group of, close friends, and it was good. But, so the punk scene was really, though, like finding our people.
So you were in the scene, but as far as I can tell, you don't play music.
Hell no.
No. Is that just like a personal choice, or was it?
No, we just don't play music. I don't know. I mean, my sister played clarinet for a hot minute. I don't know. Like, we sing a little bit. Like, we think we can sing. I don't know that anybody else thinks we can sing. But we just never were interested in being in a band in particular. We were more, like, my sister was a visual artist. I was a writer. So we were in the scene, I guess, in our own ways. Like, I was making zines and stuff like that at the time for my friends. And my sister was painting. So we were, but, that was sort of, I guess, where we all intersected. Because a lot of our friends who did play music were also either writers or visual artists, too. So there was sort of just a sort of a meeting of creative minds at punk shows, and so it really, it worked for us, and we didn't have to be in a band, which is great. Lord.
That's great. So, tell us about your first zine. Who was it for? What was it about?
Oh, dear God. Let's see.
I think the first one you can remember.
Well, because I'm telling you, it's been like, I'm 45 now. The first one I can remember is Fresh Greens, Is Your Cabbage Lonely, which I still have one copy. I think one copy is so bad. And it was really just a way for me to, like, write my poetry and Xerox it or whatever, the copy machine, and make it for my friends so my friends could read my poetry and crazy thoughts. And I would just clip things out of, Vogue magazines or whatever, and do collages, and I think everybody in the 90s was doing zines, regardless of how good or bad they were. But it was just a way for me to, like, share my writing because, you know, I wanted to be published. I had no idea how to approach that at the time. I was young and dumb, I guess is the words. But I just had no idea how to approach being published. And there was, you know, like I would try like the Literary Leo and I would never get accepted. I'd be so pissed. I was like, one day you're going to be my bitch, Leo. And I was right. It's just so funny. The years that when I finally did write for Leo, I was like, finally. So all these years of trying to get in this magazine. But anyway, so yeah, it was really just a way for me to let people read my writing.
Okay. That's cool. So, it seems like you've always kind of had a buddy, you know, like your sis has been there.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're 4 years apart, but we're very close, and we were always together. So we were like, I don't want to go if you're not going. Like that. What if I feel, like, awkward? I mean, and it was important, I think, for us because we were both Black, so we could talk about how we felt about things in our own way. Mm-hmm. And then to show up and, you know, there not necessarily be Black faces. But when we did discover that there were, you know, 3 or 4 other Black kids, it was like, oh, we're not the only, you know, it would sort of justify who we were for us. Like, we're not the only weirdos in this world or in Louisville. You know, like, we would hang out on Bardstown Road and do all the things that kids did back in the 90s. Take flyers off the poles.
You know, it's a rite of passage.
It is.
When you did find other Black faces or brown faces in at your shows, did you find that they were just as open to you as you were to them? I know, at least for me, sometimes at metal shows, if there is another like Black metalhead, we do the same where we're looking at
each other. Yeah,
you know.
Like, oh, it's you're like, here too.
You're here, and I don't know about you, but I'm like, I feel you though.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, I think for sometimes yes, and then sometimes I think it was like, I was the only Black one. Like, this is my territory. What is, there's another Black one now. Now there are two. So I think there was maybe a little competition. I don't feel like it was competition because we were all thinking, I'm sure, different things and whatnot. A lot of the time, though, we would, and even years later, I think some of the people that we started the scene with, who we weren't particularly friends with at the time, we've grown to, like, respect where we came from, like, you know, having both been, you know, some of the few Black kids at shows and, like, finally seeing that about each other. I don't think it was something that we talked about then, being Black. I think, you know, I think the thoughts about being in Black in certain, in white spaces, which is, you know, a much wider conversation now, didn't exist. Then you just sort of dropped yourself in white spaces. And, you know, so, but we didn't discuss being Black in white spaces. We just were, but we knew it. And I think afterwards, as we grew up and matured, when we do see, you know, the other people from those days, for the most part, we realize, you know, like, oh, you know, we were kind of on the cutting edge of, you know, what kids can do now. Like, we were sort of the first kids to just jump into, we're gonna do this shit, you know? Like,
for sure.
And screw what people thought about it. So.
So, you've talked about how your involvement with the Louisville punk scene, especially, came through writing, and it seems like, you know, sometimes when we think of a music scene, we're thinking about like musicians, mm-hmm. and their performances, but it seems that you're kind of arguing that like, no, it's more than that. It's writers. It's poets.
I definitely think, yeah, our punk scene was, it was a DIY scene. So it was not just the music. It was definitely about the people, like even the kids in the bands would create their own like art, you know, album art, and they would obviously write their own lyrics. So it was all of those things. It was visual artists, writers. Yeah, so I do think definitely there's a wider scope that the Louisville punk scene it should encompass. It's more than the music, for sure.
So, how would you define it from your perspective?
I mean, like...
How would you define the Louisville punk scene when you were in it? And it sounds like you were in it between, like, the early 90s?
So, like, oh, God.
To...
Probably 92 or 3-ish until there were no clubs to go to. Like, you know, there was, like, Tooligan's closed, and that was devastating. And then the Machine closed, and, like, the Machine probably closed first before... I can't remember which was gone first. But, yeah, there was just, like, nowhere to go, and everybody was growing up and in college or starting families. So every, you know, like life does when you're young, it takes over and you go your separate ways. And then you see each other and you remember, oh, this is where we came from. And, like, actually I had a lunch with Jason Clark, who was in Son of Dog. And I'm sure there are plenty of Son of Dog flyers and things in the archive. But he, you know, was in a band. And for 25, like, we've known each other all those years and never sat down to have, like, lunch until this year. And it was like, why have we not done this before? 25 years we've known each other. So it's just, I don't know, life took over and just sort of all went, everybody went their separate ways. So I don't know.
Okay, cool. Record. Okay, cool. So, I guess I'll just come right out with it. Do you consider yourself a feminist?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What does that mean to you? What is a feminist?
So, for me, being a feminist has always meant just owning who I was as a person, but also fighting for that for my sisters. And at the same time, respecting people's cultural boundaries, because I think that sometimes, particularly Western feminists, can get in our heads the idea of what feminism should look like for, say, a woman in the Middle East, and that's something else altogether. So I think, and probably that's an aging feminist, somebody who's learned about the world, and realizing that you have to respect people's cultural boundaries, even with ideas that seem very important to you, like education and safety for women and those sorts of things. But, you know, so, but yes, I do consider myself very much a feminist.
Did you think that the punk scene was particularly feminist here in Louisville?
I think it grew that way. Okay. I think it's, you know, it was always a sausage fest. But I think that once girls started to connect with each other and find their places and then started to form bands, and I think that it definitely... it grew that way. Definitely, I think a lot of the women that I know from the punk scene would consider themselves feminists, and definitely became more active and whatnot. Back in the 90s, a lot of them were, you know, like doing escorts at the clinic, and there were always, I think, feminists there. But I think that as we matured, our ideas about the world also matured. And that, you know, we could declare ourselves feminists and things like that. But when you're, you know, 18, 19, you don't necessarily know who you are, where you're going. You know, like, you're hanging out with your friends and it's fun. But then all these new ideas start to happen, especially as you enter college. And we're all entering that age of, you know, a college education. So those new ideas were coming, and you could see it in the music and then in the way people started to change, I think.
So, if you can name, just off the top of your head, maybe like five, it doesn't have to be five, of your favorite bands from when you were in the punk scene, like, who would they be?
Oh, God. So, my favorite bands were Evergreen, which was Cinderblock and whatever other names they had. And then Son of Dog was always one of our favorites. Sancred was another one that we loved. Falling Forward, we loved. Lather, we would go to, oh, God. Loppy Bojimy, when they would come through town, was great. That was always a really fun time. I'm trying to think who else. We would go see in Kendall. We would go see any damn band that was on the stage, pretty much. We would go to the show. But definitely, you know, any Evergreen show we were at, Sydney Cinderblock Evergreen show, that was our favorite band. And probably because we were also friends with most of them, that it was, you know, like going to see, hang out with our friends and listen to them play music. So I'm trying to think, who else did we go see a lot? Concrete was another one that we loved. I can't think of any. I mean, there were plenty, but...
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. So what was it What was it like being friends with the band?
Did it
change your perspective as a participant in, like, the show itself? Or was it just kind of like, it didn't really make a difference?
It didn't really make a difference. I mean, it was fun because we could, like, jump on the stage when they were playing, you know, like, if one of our friends were playing. We were always, not always, but a lot of the times when they were playing at the Machine stage, which is a really big stage, we could, like, hang off the side, like, Evergreen. We would just, like, stand around on the side of the stage. And that was fun because you could sort of see the crowd enjoying the show and you get that perspective, I guess. But it didn't, I don't, it was just, you know, and Tim Ruth, the kid who was our entry point into the punk scene, was in Evergreen. So I think that's sort of how we ended up being, like, friends with him, was through his, through that connection with him after he passed us up with the flyer. Like, we sort of were like, nah, you know, and then sort of we, once he saw us at the show, he was like, you did come, you know, and that sort of solidified a friendship. And, you know, that was sort of, you know, it was like, we sort of bonded, I guess, over that whole episode.
Yeah, so tell us more about him. Like, who is this Tim Ruth, you say?
Well, yeah, well, I don't really know what Tim Ruth is doing now. It's been many, many years since I've seen him. And I think, you know, he's had his own life challenges. I do know that some of that has happened, but, you know, that's his story to tell. No, he was just, you know, a kid who played guitar. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
That we met at Jefferson Mall.
Yeah, I feel
that. So, there was one thing I thought about. Evergreen was always sort of a funky band, and there was a whole, like, real 70s, like, vibe with a lot of the stuff they did, which was, I guess, popular in the 90s anyway, with the big shoes and bell bottoms were back. So Evergreen was always the band that would, like, would dress up in some crazy outfit and go to their show, which I still love a costume.
That's cool. So there was, like, a distinct aesthetic, you want to say, something that's a little maybe not necessarily different, but just, like, striking about their punk shows in general, or do you think it was something broader, like the Louisville scene in general just had its own, like, aesthetic?
I definitely think Louisville has its own aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And then Evergreen had its, I mean, every band had their own aesthetic. So there were, like, the straight edge bands who everybody would go to the show with the X on every part of their body, it felt like. But Evergreen shows were kind of, yeah, they were all just kind of funky. And so, you know, you were going to be dancing and, you know, a lot of times they would do, like, yeah, dress up. And I can't remember what the theme of the shows would be, but you would go and, like, whatever weird 70s crap that you own. Or you would go to the thrift store and find it, which we spent lots of time at the thrift stores, God. I don't know, but Louisville definitely was very, there was a period of time that I don't think we listened to anything that was made outside of Louisville. We would just, Louisville bands were enough for us, and that was really sort of a unique experience where you're like, when we finally sort of discovered that there were other bands outside of Louisville again, it was like, what? We had been listening to nothing but our own friends play music, and so it was sort of odd but interesting. I don't know, Louisville was very much like, do it yourself, try it, fuck it, you know, like, there was the whole attitude of, like, I guess it was just a punk attitude of just, you know, if you don't help me, I'm going to do it myself. And then just ignoring the plan, what people think you should be doing, and just trying and doing something interesting or on your own, which is, I guess, that was sort of our aesthetic. Do it yourself. Do it on your own. Who cares what people think?
Cool. So, do you think that the Louisville punk scene reached outside of Louisville? Do you think people, like, in Lexington or in Indianapolis, do you think they were listening to our music? Or?
I'm sure it's at some level they would be, because the bands would travel. Like, some of them would travel around to maybe Lexington or Indianapolis. And then there were bands from, like, say, Nashville. I think a lot of people tell me it was from Nashville. They would come through town. Shelter was one. I think, I don't know where they're from. I feel like they were from California. But so there was this little, like, groups of kids that were traveling around. And so if they were coming through town, they would pick up music, I'm sure, from here. And if our band's kids went anywhere, then they would, you know, share their music elsewhere. So I'm sure that there was, you know, people, there was that exchange of music. I don't, you know, I wouldn't know because I was here.
Okay, cool. So the last little bit of Erica I think we want to explore is your significant other.
So my husband, Rob, is a printer, and he is from Indiana. He's not involved in local music at all. He went away to college at Ball State and then moved back. He plays guitar when he like basically plays like in the morning or night. He doesn't really play in a band. He refuses to do that. We've always had similar tastes in music. Like he was really into sort of, he was into punk music in sort of a different way. Like I'm trying to think of bands that he really loves. He like, what is it, pig fuck or whatever they call pig face crap that I don't know what the hell it is.
is it metal? Pig Destroyer?
No. It's a, and I don't know why I'm forgetting the name of the band that we've been to see them several times. I can't remember. It's just because I'm old. Like we liked similar music, and then at the same time, he introduced me, I think, to it. He actually had a more diverse music palette when I met him than I expected. And I had sort of been developing a more diverse palette for myself other than like punk music or metal. I just was exploring like world music and Irish music. Like I was, and then when I met him, he was really into this sort of, it was punk, but like a sort of 90s Chicago punk kind of thing. What else did he, I don't know. He, like my husband is very quiet and doesn't want to stand out. So he, which is, you know, and I am a reluctant person to stand out, but often I'm somehow getting myself in a situation where I'm like in the spotlight or something. But he's, the opposite of me in that way. He doesn't like, he's very quiet. But he was not involved in Louisville's punk scene at all.
Okay. Was he involved in any other scene, though? Maybe metal? It's the 90s, maybe ska? I don't know if that was a thing in Louisville.
No. I mean, he was away at Ball State most of the, like, a lot of the 90s, so. Or the period in which I would have been going to punk shows. So he was thinking about whatever people in Muncie, Indiana think about. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I do know, I guess, but I can't think of the names of his bands because I'm tired and old. And I'm so mad. There's one in particular that he loves, and we've been to see them, Scratch Acid, which is an outshoot of one of the bands that he likes. And I'm ticked that I can't remember. You know, I'm going to look it up. I was trying to resist being that person, but I'm going to do it.
It's okay.
Scratch Acid. Let's see. It's David Yao. Let's see. There we go. Oh, Jesus Lizard. Yeah, I wear that t-shirt all the time. So, like, the Jesus Lizard was one of his favorite bands. Still is one of his favorite bands. And so anything sort of like that, sort of a dirty blend of punk and hard rock, I guess, would be the best way to describe it, because it wasn't really metal. A lot of it was hard. Like he does like metal. He likes black metal and what I call Cookie Monster music that I don't always want to listen to. Which I don't, sometimes I don't mind it, but sometimes I'm like, this is ridiculous, right? This is the point at which, see, my husband's white. I'm like, this is the point at which my blackness takes over and I cannot listen to this. So we have that talk all the time. I'm like, I'm too black for this.
So it seems like your blackness and your involvement in the punk scene, with your sister and all your friends seems to be connected to who you are as a person, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So I was wondering if there are, like, do you feel like you still lead a kind of punk lifestyle? Do you think there's something that the Louisville punk scene has left with you that was like long lasting?
Oh, definitely. I feel like, I mean, I don't know how punk my life is unless poverty is punk. So, yeah, being poor, yes, definitely still punk. But, you know, I do still, I think, find ways to live creatively that I will never surrender that. And once I stopped working for a full, like, stopped working for the man, stopped working full time at a, like, a very straight-laced job, I really sort of rediscovered that part of myself and like pierced my face and got a bunch of tattoos, and which I think a lot of people my age are doing because, you know, we can afford it now. But I think that, you know, sort of I'm going to live my life the way I want idea has stuck with me and my sister too. So, and, you know, periodically we'll talk about it. We're like, we sort of remember where we came from. Because I'm not, you know, we don't want to lose that part, the edgy part of yourself that makes you an interesting person. And it's not that just that you want to just be a kid again. You don't, I don't want to be 20 again, except for like to have a 20-year-old body and 20-year-old knees. But I do think, you know, I always want to be in touch with that creative person who grew out of, you know, going to those punk shows and all of that, that sort of world.
So, you mentioned something about your husband being white and you being black.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that there seems to be something unique about being black and also punk. Uh-huh. Would you...
That's okay.
That's ridiculous. Would you say that's true? And then, like, in what ways would you say black punks differ from punk as a whole?
Well, we often have to deal with a lot of blowback that other punk kids don't have to deal with, from not only, you know, like the way we look in white society, because we're already looked at strange by white people because we're black, and then you add, you know, piercings and strange hair on top of it, or strange clothes, then you're doubly a mess. And then your parents then are like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, it's so, you sort of are caught in the middle of two worlds. It's like, do you want to, you know, there are black kids who are like, do you want to be white? No, this is, you don't have to be white to be punk. You know, there's, and you'd be like, the singer of, you know, Bad Brains wasn't, you know, white, HR is black, and you're like, there are people like me in the scene. And it's the same when I was like a metal kid trying to, you know, justify being black and liking guitars with Jimi Hendrix. It's like, Jimi Hendrix is a black man, he set the standard for guitar playing in rock music for so many years. And it's like, you know, having to justify that was so, it was so frustrating, because it's like, we're already there, we shouldn't have to justify why we like it. But yeah, I think being, you know, black and punk, it's that same thing. Like being black and liking rock music, having to justify why you are accessing something that basically comes from you anyway. You know, like really, right. It's ours anyway. It's, you know, beats come from us. So, you know, it's just, you know, I think it's just being caught, you know, in the middle of all these sort of intersections and worlds, and having to justify why you decided to put yourself there to both your own people and then to people who are white or whatever.
So, you've already kind of talked about not being in the punk scene anymore. I was wondering about when did you leave the scene and why did you leave?
Well, I wouldn't could say that I left. I think I just, everybody grew up and grew, you know. And I think when the Brick House started, I don't think I ever went to the Brick House. That was the point at which I was already, I guess, out and just onto something else. So basically, I'm like, this is interesting now, I'm going this direction. And I wasn't, you know, I think there was, and I hate to say the generation gap happened, but I, you know, I got older. And, you know, once I hit 30 and I had different friends, I got more involved in the visual art scene. And so I was, you know, hanging out with visual artists a lot, or I was doing poetry nights and reading my own work. And I think I just I didn't have time or the interest in to dig up like music scenes anymore. And so I guess that's really it. It was no, there was no point in which I was like, fuck this, you know. It was just, it just sort of naturally happened that I just got involved in other things. And I do, like, if you know, there's a, like, a band will do a show, like, Evergreen did a show a few years back, and then somebody else did one. And I was like, yeah, that's fine, I'm gonna go to that, because it's, of course, the same bands I listened to when I was young, but I don't know, like, I just, it wasn't that bands were good, because I still, you know, occasionally I will see a band. Like, I saw Girlwood just recently, mm-hmm. and I was like, yes, this is awesome, this is great. And I was, you know, I felt that Louisville still has that same, like, really good punk energy, and that there are still kids, and I say kids because now I'm 45, and 20-year-olds are kids to me. I don't know how old the women in Girlwood are, but...
Early 20s.
Yeah, I figured as much. So I'm like, you know, that's... But they're so good, and I'm like, I'm glad that it still exists for kids to access. Now, I'm sure you'll talk to many people my age who are in the punk scene and be like, but there was something completely special about us. And I think it was just because we had places to go, and it was crowded every weekend. There was all, there, like, all of us went. It wasn't just, you know, 20 or 30 kids. There were hundreds of kids at some of these shows. Like, you couldn't, there were shows that where you couldn't walk. You were just, like, slammed in there like sardines.
Wow.
And, yeah, like, now people are begging to get people to come to their shows. We didn't, you didn't have to pick us. We were all there. I don't know why.
Well, honestly, I have run out of questions to ask you. So if there's anything else you want to add, I mean, you're more than welcome to just, like, speak your piece.
I cannot think of a thing, but, you know,
sorry,
I don't know.
So much.
Yeah. It was a good time. I think it definitely, like, when people talk about it, you know, and I know that a lot of kids are like, oh, these people always think there was something so special about their scene. I don't, it may be, you know, that it wasn't that. The kids were special. It was just, at the time, it was a place where any kid that was remotely interested in punk music went every weekend. And you knew that you were going to go on Friday night, you were going to go to one place. Saturday night, you were going to go to one place. And on Sunday, you were going to Tool Again's because it was the all ages show. And everybody went. And it wasn't, nobody had to beg you to come to their show. They would put up the flyer and you'd see it on Barson Road and you'd go. And now it's, I don't know if it's more difficult to share the information, which you'd think would be easier because of the internet, which we didn't have as widely as we do now. We had it sometime in the 90s, and dial-up internet. I don't know. I just think there definitely was something in the air that was special. And I wish that, you know, kids in Louisville could have it again, that same, you know, going to a show where hundreds of your friends are going to be, or even if you're not actually friends, but hundreds of people with the same ideas and same cares would show up and pack into a room and get hot and sweaty and stinky. And you'd, like, people, there were always characters at shows, you know, like you would, like John Cook, who I'm sure you'll hear about. I think he was in Crane. Was that his band? And he was all, you see him in a show, you're like, oh, there's going to be a fight. Like, you knew. You're like, oh, here, it's going to be a fight. And so, you know, it's the kind of thing you expected. So there are always, like, these characters running through the scene, which is neat. Some of the characters are still here with us, and some of them aren't.